Okay. So, how's everybody today? So we're holding a Perek Beis of the Nesiv HaTshuva. Last time, we spent 3 weeks learning the first Nesiv, the first Perek of the Nesiv HaTshuva, and our focus fundamentally, let's talk about the two things, the two major principles of Tshuva that we extracted, that we learned from the Maral in this realm. One was the idea that tshuva is for the person to bring mind back to bear over matter. That if chet comes from some level of shtus, what we call nichnas bei ruach shtus, some level of not thinking, of allowing just the person's own, you know, base or simple drives to have them do something that their mind would tell them otherwise, tshuva, coming right from das to tshuva, like we said in the Shemana Esrei, is to get the person to be guided instead by what is right, by what is true, instead of just by whatever pulled them in that direction. That was component one. And component number two focused on the Chazal that we went through with, you know, the Nevuah. Chachma couldn't say exactly what should happen to the Chayte. Nevuah couldn't, I mean, they said something, but they couldn't say tshuva, and Torah couldn't, but they came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem gave them tshuva. And what we focused on last time was that next piece of development in the Maral, which is that tshuva is really returning to Hashem. It's not just returning to your, you know, to correct thinking. It's returning to Hashem. And the expressions which Chazal have of Lev Nishbar V'Nitke Elohim Lo Sivze, that Hashem does not turn away a broken heart. The idea of the person who's humbling themselves, which is, of course, a necessary component of tshuva, to realize mistake and error requires a degree of humility, a great degree of humility. And humility brings the person actually to a point where they recognize who they are and who they aren't, who they are dependent on, what they are dependent on. So humility brings a person back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And bringing the person back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a fundamental definition of tshuva. And in that we got into this discussion about korbanos and that relationship to tshuva and so on. So those were the two. Just want to say, in summarizing it, something which is very beautiful and elegant, which the Maral is going to teach us later in this perek, we're not going to get there today, is that this corresponds to Chazal's characterization of two kinds of tshuva. Famous Chazal, famous Gemara, where the Gemara distinguishes between tshuva meira and tshuva me'ava. Tshuva meira, tshuva out of fear, where a person does tshuva out of fear. Uh-oh, I shouldn't have done that. And there, what do Chazal say? There, the sin which he did before, even though he did it deliberately, is made into a shkoga. It's as if he did it by mistake, which allows it to some degree to be written off. And then there's another kind of tshuva, which is tshuva me'ava, tshuva out of love. Right? They want to do, not that they're afraid of something, not that they say, uh-oh, but because they want to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there the Avera becomes like a zchus. It becomes like a mitzvah. The Avera which he did in the past becomes like a mitzvah. The Gemara makes that distinction. So he says that, the Maral says there that tshuva meira is where the person realized that they made a mistake, that the wrong part of them was driving their decisions. And now they say, I shouldn't have done that. They're not particularly interested in Hashem Yisbarach. They're just not interested in, you know, in the tragic consequences of the sin. So there, indeed, all that happens is, the tshuva doesn't make them close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not the nature of the Avera. That's not the nature of the tshuva. The question is whether the damage which was done remains. And there, now that mind has kicked in, you say, I really made a mistake. You know, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago with Kol Nidre, right, where, you know, you do that at the onset of Yom Kippur, and the idea is, now is the moment of clarity. know, anything that I do the rest of the time, whenever I say something, it's because I'm not thinking as clearly as I'm thinking right now. There's a clarity of thought. I've detached myself from certain things that confuse me. There's a clarity of thought. And what do we say right after? We say Kol Nedrei, V'nislach l'chol adas b'nei Yisrael v'lagir hagar b'socham, ki l'chol am b'shkaga. There will be forgiveness granted to everybody because they did it by mistake. We did everything by mistake. Well, to some degree we did. Even the things which we did on purpose, we weren't thinking clearly. That's the tshuva meira component. So to some degree we're able to distance ourselves. Tshuva me'ava, by very definition, is coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the nature of the tshuva. The tshuva isn't because mind has triumphed over matter. The tshuva is because the desire to be close to Hashem has taken the place of the distance which exists within the person to Hashem. And there, so we'll talk in Yiras Hashem, we'll learn more about the details of it and why we say it becomes like a mitzvah, right? And of course, you know, to some degree, it's just a simple expression, I'm oversimplifying, of absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? The person who's farther away and runs to become close to Hashem will have to some degree greater passion, greater ava, and greater connection than the person who never was, who was always close. Right, who sort of just gets used to it, doesn't feel as much the power of Kirvas Elokim, something which we observe every day, right? The freshness of the person who's not used to it and who's excited about the connection. So to some degree the distance, the absence, makes it grow fonder. So again, we'll deal with it more later, but I think it's just a very beautiful, simple way of describing the two facets of tshuva which we've learned from the Maharal. On the one hand, a matter of judgment, where the person, when they realize, oi, I made a bad judgment, that was a mistake, what we call tshuva meira. And on the other hand, the tshuva, which is not coming from just a matter of loss of judgment, but feeling disconnected, and then being able to somehow humble oneself, yes, and to really connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, right, to come close to Hashem, which is the ultimate mechanism of Shuva El Hashem, Shuva Yisrael Ad Hashem Alekecha, Kuli Mochem Devarim B'Shuva El Hashem, right? So that piece is the Shuva Me'ava, that's that component. Okay. Today, everybody okay? Questions, comments? Today, we begin Perek Beis. Now, just a little note the way the I'm not an expert in the Nesivos Olam by any stretch, but one of the ways that the Nesivos Olam works, one of the patterns of the way he works things in the Nesivos Olam is, it's almost, you know, he takes a subject, he has many subjects which he touches in the Nesivos Olam, and he brings, you know, there's a sefer called the Menorah Hamor. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Menorah Hamor was very often actually even learned by women, sometimes more than men. It speaks about, it's a topically organized sefer. It was written many hundreds of years ago. It's a topically organized sefer, and it brings any number of chazalin on a specific subject, but with relatively little analysis and discussion. Just he strings together a whole bunch of chazalin about the subject. The Maharal and the Nesivos, to a certain degree, is an explained Menorah Hamor. I don't know if that's a fair way for me to say it, but as I say, in other words, he takes a whole bunch of chazalin about something, and he'll explain them. Now, of course, a theme is developed, a theme emerges, right, but it's that's sort of the way it's done. So you'll see, for instance, I don't know how much we're going to get up to it in this parak, but like later in this parak, he'll bring a whole bunch of a series of gedayla tshuva statements, which Chazal say in the Gemara and Yuma, tshuva is great that it does this, tshuva is great that it does that, and it's not necessarily okay. Let's see. I'm bringing this now as a raya to what we developed before. It's a series of things. Again, to some degree, the Maharal does that in all of his Sfarim, to some degree. But especially here in the Nesivos. Now, The Maral here, however, brings this perek. He's going to bring in many chazal, and we'll touch upon specifically one very famous issue that we have to do, that we're going to deal with here, Mi'at Hashem, in our discussion today. Even though the Maral doesn't explicitly bring it here, but he invokes something which is an obvious connection, or Hartman discusses in the footnote, but this one is actually a fairly obvious connection. The Maral begins by a question, and the question is, why should tshuva help? Maybe it's the same reason why Chachma and Nevuah and Torah didn't know the answer. But why should tshuva help? He sinned already. He should be culpable for the sin. But of course he continues the question, and he says, tell me something. In a human court, even a Jewish one, in a Beis Din, if a person sins, they could have a jailhouse epiphany, a jailhouse conversion. They can be doing genuine tshuva, not just to sell the book rights. And nevertheless, we're going to ignore it. The person could be a genuine Baal Tshuva, but when the court case is over, it was determined that he was Rotzeach, he murdered on purpose, he was Mechal Shabbos on purpose, and with all the right conditions, even though he did serious tshuva afterwards, we will still kill him. So why, in the Bezen Shalmala, do we say tshuva helps? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognize tshuva in his court, if we don't recognize it in our court as defined by him? Fundamental question. Fundamental question which the Maral asks. Now, I want to pause now to go to that Chazal and that famous question, a classic question, which we're familiar with. The question is like this. The Gemara says, when discussing the story of Yishmael and Yishmael's cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yishmael was dying of thirst. Avraham Avinu had sent away Hagar and Yishmael from the house. Yishmael is gripped by a fever in the desert, and Yishmael's sick. He's so sick, he's so crying so badly that his mother can't take it, and she distances herself so she doesn't have to see him. So Yishmael cries out, and the pasuk says to Hagar, don't worry, Hashem heard the voice of the child Bashir Husham, right? He's going to be okay. Suddenly she sees a well, and so on and so forth. So the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that there was a big uproar about this, because the Ishmaelim are not going to be a great factor in the lives of the Jewish people. The Gemara is even more specific, because there's a story in the Navi, well, when the Jewish people are traveling, and the Ishmaelim, it's embellished by the Medrash, that the Ishmaelim said, oh, cousins, and they brought out to them herring. Now, a Jew can never turn down a piece of herring. So they had some herring, and what happens when you eat herring? Thirsty. You get very thirsty. It's a big problem I have. This is a very important note. I think it should be recorded for posterity. But in Eretz Yisrael, they have the best herring. The best herring. If you eat herring, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, they serve these like 15 versions of herring for breakfast. Right? I can't try all 15, but nevertheless, we do our best. Right? But in Eretz Yisrael, it's also very dry. So you eat herring for breakfast, you're going to be dehydrated. You have to mamish, tank up. Otherwise you're going to be dehydrated the rest of the day. So the Yishmael and the Kal Yisrael come out, they give them herring, and then they say, oh, we need a drink. So they gave them flasks that appeared full, and the Jewish people, who were very thirsty to begin with, and now were extra thirsty, they put the flasks up to their mouth, they opened them out, and the flasks were filled with air. They didn't get water. The air entered inside of them, and the Jewish people died. Many Jewish people died. So the Malachim said, the descendants of this man have plans to kill your children by thirst. And now they're thirsty, he's thirsty, and you're going to give them water? We can make the story of history a lot simpler if we just eliminate this guy. Right? Imagine. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, nope, doesn't make a difference. As the pasuk says, when the Malach spoke to Hagar, Hashem heard the voice of the child, Basher hu sham. Where he is. As he is. Don't talk to me about the future. Only talk to me about the present. That's what the Gemara says. What's the problem? What's the kasha? The kasha is that Ben Sairu Meira. So it's very convenient kasha because every year we read Parshas Kiseitse a couple of weeks before Rosh Hashanah, right? When everybody's thinking about Tshuva. We get to Parshas Kiseitse and we have the second paragraph in Parshas Kiseitse is the Ben Sairu Meira. The Ben Sairu Meira, the rebellious son, who, he's a little boy, basically, he's just a bar mitzvah bocher, and he's stolen a little bit, and we take him out and we kill him. Why do we kill him? Says the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, because he stole something from his parents and ate, he's chayav of Misa. No, Ben Sairu Meira nidain al shem Saifai. He's judged based on what his ultimate end, where he's headed. If he's at this age, he's already stealing to satisfy his appetites, he's going to end up having appetites that rise, and needs that rise, and aggression that rises. He's going to end up killing somebody in order to be able to satisfy, to feed his habit. So therefore, we say, look, we're going to kill him. Zakai val yomuschai. We'll kill him now, rather than wait for him to do his crime. So kasha is, I thought we say that Hashem is listening to Yishmael now, because now he's fine, even though we can project what he's going to do in the future. Why, by the Ben Sairu Meira, do we punish him based on projection of what he'll do in the future? Now, one answer, which is given, I think, by the Mizrahi, one of the Mefarshim of Rashi, I think the Maral brings it in the Gur Aryeh and Chumash as well, is, well, it could be that while the Ben Sairu Meira is already on the trajectory towards doing that, Yishmael wasn't quite on the trajectory, hadn't quite begun the process. If Yishmael was on the path, it would be different. But the Malachim were asking because they knew what Yishmael was going to end up doing, even though somebody looking at him now may not have been able to tell that what was going to happen. By the Ben Sairu Meira, we see the pattern unfolding. By Yishmael, maybe we don't see the pattern unfolding. Of course, that's not Pashut. Because Rashi learns in Chumash that when originally Yishmael was being sent away, it was because she saw him engaged in all kinds of things. Gilui Arayos, Shfichus Damim, Aveda Zara. It didn't sound like Yishmael, even at the age of 13, or whatever age he was at this point, he was more than 13, it was at least 16, 17, excuse me, that he was already problematic, it sounds. Okay, but that's the answer which he gives. The Maral says a different answer. And Maral's answer is that Ben Sairu Meira is something which is done by a Bezdin Shalmata, by a human court. Yishmael was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, Bezdin Shalmata. Hashem says, I'm going to judge him based on how he is now. Bezdin Shalmata might judge him based on what he's going to be in the future. That's the distinction which the Maral says. We're going to explain it a little bit more. And aniyim b'mokem echad v'ashirim b'mokem achir. It's much more understandable in light of what he says here, right? But that's a fundamental distinction which he makes. Now let's just add an akuda, a very important point, so we can understand how connected the two sugyas are to each other. The Rabbeinu Chananel on the side of the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah cites the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, where the Talmud Yerushalmi says something simple but beautiful and connected. In this Gemara, the question was, why are you listening to Yishmael? You know what he's going to do in the future? Hashem says, I listen to him where he is now. Says the Yerushalmi, when he said, I listen to him where he is now, that not only rules out projecting about the future, but it also rules out the past. Tshuva is based on Basher Husham. Where you are right now. Now you are contrite, you are pure. I don't care what you did in the past. Basher Husham cuts away the past this as well as the future. Or I should say the future as well as the past. I'm not sure which one I should say actually. But both of them.
So that's to say his crime by the well was some
so it could have been a tshuva also for whatever he'd done before. But whether you're going to apply it just to Yishmael or in general, Hashem listens Bashir Hu Shom. For Hashem, it's now that counts. I'm not looking at the past, I'm not looking at the future. What you understand now is also the core of what we're talking about over here. By a Bezen Shalmata, that's obviously not true. The Bezen Shalmata will project the future, which means also they will also not only consider the future, but, and more elementarily, they will consider as well the past. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who judges Bashir Hu Shom, based on where you are right now, so there, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no judging for the future, and there's tshuva. Both of those things are going to be true. So that's a difference.
You can also use it to explain how the Mizrahi, there's a Mizrahi who wanted a, if he was 17 and 18, he had already done Gilei Raya Shvi'a Chasdamim, using his Rabbeinu Chananu.
Right, it could be that that's eliminated too, that's right. Right, correct.
The idea that basically Samatha looks at the future, that's not really a yisod, right? I mean, it's this one case, but we don't learn that out like as a rule.
Ben Meira is a unique din, 100%, and as you say, as you're alluding now, may never even have been applied, you know, actually, literally, maybe lahayav le'asid liyos, maybe it would never be applied because the conditions for Ben Serum are so great. But when Chazal say derosh v'kabel schar, so why was it given if it was not practical? Because you're supposed to learn the parsha and get reward. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't teach us tiddlywinks, so we should just learn and get reward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching us here a fundamental principle, about an operative principle. So yes, Beis Din didn't usually do all of this stuff, but it's in this way, you know, projecting what tomorrow's behavior was going to be. But there's something big to learn, and you'll see in the Maharal's explanation what he means by it. Yeah.
To some extent, I think we'll find that Beis Din did project, even though this is obviously a very extreme case, because the whole idea of Beis Din doing, let's say, killing somebody who's a mass murderer, let's say. So to some extent, it's a societal thing. But what does that mean? It means you're not killing him because of what he did, because, I mean, Torah didn't deserve it. And we're not even killing him because the Torah said he did, you know, Torah did, and we think he deserved it. We're killing him because he's going to go and kill other people.
You're talking about when Beis Din are doing it, Shaloi Min Adin?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a difference.
Is that more of a future thing than a past thing?
It may be. I don't think it's reserved for such cases. It may be for the future of this person. It may be for the teach a lesson to, you know, to society, for, you know, to be as a deterrent value for other people, which is also to some degree in the future. I hear that. The reason why I'm not rushing to embrace that is because, in a sense, that's not really Beis Din functioning as Beis Din, and here Beis Din is functioning as Beis Din. In other words, I think if you recall, we discussed this sugya with the Drosha Saran, right? I was there, the Sanhedrin is really functioning more as a governmental function rather than as a court function. They have to make society work. You know, the guy's going to say, well, I guess everybody knows that I killed him, but because, I go and I'm the chveis, you know, the so-and-so strangler, right? Nobody ever sees what I do, but I always leave a note and I say that it's me, and you... Don't kill a person based on self-incrimination, you know. So, sorry, Charlie. Mm-hmm. Right? So, even though you know that I've killed 75, people, it doesn't make a difference. So, Beis Din sometimes has to step in, but that's not in their Sanhedrin function, in a sense. That's putting on their preservation of society hat, rather than the truth of what they are absolutely, originally, so to speak, charged to do. The Ikar charge to. Here, the din of Beis Serem Meira is a fundamental function of Beis Din. Okay. So the Maharal here explains the idea. We'll read the few words. And the Maharal is going to explain it on two levels. The second level is going to be very related to what we learned before. The first one, not. Ki Beis Din Shalmala Kumaisha Tachas Yodam Hara Shadonin Al Hara Kach Donin Al Atayv Gamkein. He says the difference between Beis Din Shalmala and Beis Din Shalmata is Beis Din Shalmala judges a person for the bad deeds which the person does, as well as for the good deeds that they do. In Beis Din Shalmala there are punishments and there are rewards. However, So therefore, Bezen Shamala will take into account also the good, not only the bad thing which he did, but also the good thing which he did, the tshuva. They look at everything. And therefore, the tshuva registers. However, but the Bezen down here, they have only one job. They just punish. You ever hear of going to Bezen to get a reward? It doesn't happen. That's not their job. Their job is just to punish. They only judge a person for bad things which the person did. He says we explain this in Pirkei Avos a little bit. So it's actually Perek Dalet Mishnah Chav Gimel. There are 100 different ways to break up the Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos. I guess before he wrote this, before he wrote the one in Pirkei Avos, he assumed he would count it as Mishnah Chav Beis. In his edition, it's actually Mishnah Chav Gimel. I should actually make a note on that here. That's the difference, says the Mara. Let's understand the difference. Okay, he says that Bezen Shalmata only looks at the negative things, only steps in when somebody's doing something wrong. They're never called upon when somebody's doing something right. And therefore, the tshuva, which is doing something right, just doesn't register with them. Whereas with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where he looks at both sides, so it registers. Now, one has to understand what that means. It's a fascinating thing to consider altogether, this idea. Did anybody ever think of this before, realize this before? That Bezen only punishes, it doesn't reward. You know, the Rambam actually notes this in his Pirush HaMishnayos on Pirkei Avos, where the Mishnah says, Havizor b'mitzvah kala kevachamura she'ein ata yedei matan schorin shel mitzvahs. You should be careful with light mitzvahs like with heavy ones, because you don't know the reward of mitzvahs. So the Rambam says, well, people know what is a more serious aveira and what is a less serious aveira, because Bezdin gives nothing for some aveiras, it gives malchus for some aveiras, it gives there's chorus for some aveiras. Right? The Torah speaks about punishments, but the Torah doesn't speak about rewards. So when it comes to mitzvahs, you don't know what's more and what's less. Aveiras you might know, but mitzvahs you don't know. The Torah doesn't speak about it. That's reserved for the Shemayim. Something very significant here. And it's also especially significant to think about this, because again, I could recall, if you wish, we learned this Yesaid in the Maral, beautiful, beautiful Yesaid in the Maral, back in the Ber HaGoyla, where the Maral speaks about the idea that a Sanhedrin that gives a unanimous vote to kill somebody, that we don't kill him. Right? The din is, it could be 37 to 34 that he's deserving a misa, we'll kill him. But if it's 71 to nothing, we won't. Which is very difficult to understand. Right? So the Maral has a beautiful explanation there. And the second component of the explanation is that, you know, the Gemara says the problem. The problem is that you were supposed to sleep on it. You know, Bezen is supposed to dwell on it. And the Maral sees that the idea is because we have a general charge, which the Sanhedrin has, of B'tzedek Tishpoit HaMisecha. Their goal is to find people innocent. Which sounds strange for a court. If a person's Chayav Misa, right, we talked about this recently, right? If a person's Chayav Misa, will accept an 11th hour appeal. According to some, right, did we talk about it here in this shir? Right, the reason why the Beis HaSkil is far from the Beis Din, right, we talked about it here in this shir? So far away from it is so that there's more time for the guy to ride up on the horse at the last second, you know, for the end of the movie, you know. There's more time for that. We encourage it, but once we decide that somebody's innocent, you can have 100 witnesses come storming into the Bezen, we're not going to reopen the case. So he says, because you have to understand that Sanhedrin is to do good. Din is to do good. It has to be clear that din is to do good. So in a case where the voices of advocacy for the person are not heard in the Sanhedrin, there's no way that people will get the understanding that they're trying to do good. In a normal case where there's 37 to 34 or 50 to 20 or 60 to 10, there's a debate. The voices of advocacy are being heard for this person. So you know that the Sanhedrin isn't just some, you know, trying to do some punishing arm. To charitably treat somebody is able to be seen in the process. If it's not going to be able to be seen in the process, then the process cannot continue. And it's especially fascinating to think about that when, as we just noticed with the help of the Maral, the Sanhedrin only punishes. They never reward. They're only there to punish. But what's going on? So the Maral, creatively, not here, but in Pirkei Avos, and he alludes to it as well in the Gur Aryeh, you have to put the three pieces together to really understand what he's saying. The Maral says, you know, Bezna has another function. They do have another function. And they do have a function by positive commandments. What's that function? Function is that they force people to do mitzvahs. Right? In the good old days, if a person wasn't doing what they were supposed to do, Bezdin taught him how to do it. Bezdin convinced him to do it. Bezdin said, made him want to do it. If you know what I mean. So what's the idea? So the Maral says that the function of the Sanhedrin of the Bezdin is like the function of Olam Hazeh. Okay, I'm interpolating a little bit. The function of Olam Hazeh is to make the person really well ready for Olam Haba in the best way. Ready for the Olam Haba, ready for real life. So we do mitzvahs in this world. And we grow and we develop ourselves. When we come to Olam Haba, we'll have an appreciation and we'll have a rich experience of Olam Haba, of knowledge of Hashem. Hashem brings sometimes punishments to the righteous in this world. Why? Because this world is a preparation for Olam Haba, and Hashem wants them to be free and clear for Olam Haba, as best as possible for Olam Haba. Hashem brings reward to evil people in this world because for their eternal world, really, they don't deserve anything. So it's that this world is a praise dar, as Rabbi Yaakov said in Pirkei Avos, Lifnei HaOlam Haba. And the Bezdin, it's their job, in that sense, to prepare the person for the Olam Haba. So what's the best way to prepare the person for Olam Haba? To make them as great as possible and to free them of any negative things. It's not their job to reward. Why should they reward? They want to get somebody to do mitzvahs, to help them on the way. If a person does something wrong, they want to help them atone for it, pay the price for it, to clear the way for the Olam Haba. That's the job of the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is there to help people get in better shape. Get in better shape for the Olam Haba. That's their job. Now, one way, a third way that they help people get in shape. So one way we have is that they'll help encourage people to do mitzvahs. Another way is that if they did something wrong, they'll help them with the kapara process, right, to wipe themselves clean. And a third way is that if a person seems to be headed, excuse the expression, to hell in a handbasket by the patterns of their behavior, the Sanhedrin will interrupt their behavior. Because their job isn't to judge the person, to decide what he deserves, what he doesn't deserve. Their job is to help the person get to the right place as best as possible. And so they have, the same way they have the job of encouraging the person to put on tefillin, they have the job of stopping the person from doing the crime. Punishment is not usually that. The punishment of the Sanhedrin is not stopping them from doing the crime, it's helping them atone for the crime. Like Chassidim Yanshei Maisa, who take Malkus on Erev Yom Kippur, you know, after Mincha. You know, whatever it is, however that works. But that's the job of the Sanhedrin. So when we speak about them beating the person to the punch, that's because, you know, the Nidan al-Shem Sefer, the Maral understands, because that's part of their function of trying to make sure that the person will be in better shape. The idea here, where he says that Shuvah works, is because, of course, in a final balance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is weighing everything, tshuva has to be dealt with as a counterpoint to the negative behavior. But for the Beis Din, all they do is they look at the negative thing which the person did. And the negative thing which the person did does create a consequence. And if they can take care of that consequence, so then they're making things better. Maybe, instead of, and one needs to study what the Maharal writes over there in Pirkei Avos, the context of what the Maharal is writing about in Pirkei Avos is, where the Mishnah says that Hashem, at the end of the fourth parak, that before Hashem there's no bribery, Hashem can't be bribed. The Maharal asks from statements of Chazal which speak about the idea of tshuva and ma'isim tayvim being a shaychad, a bribe to HaKadosh Baruch. And so, to some degree, what the Maharal explains is that for all the negative things that the person did, but on the other hand, he did a wonderful thing called tshuva. And that's another side. And while it doesn't just erase, you know, but, you know, you have to consider this opposite that. The Beis Din Shalmata is not there to decide on the sum total of what the person is. It's trying to take the negative pieces which are there and address them. And this negative piece does need to be addressed. It does need to be addressed. Now, you could still struggle with this piece. I'm going to just jump ahead to the second part of the Maharal, because I assume, if I pause and say questions or comments, I assume the question will be, but one second. But if tshuva makes the chet as if it wasn't there, so then they have nothing to expunge. They have nothing to address. Is that a question which was on anybody's mind?
Huh? The person has nothing to address because the person...
Yeah, in other words, Marasha, it's true, okay, if you're going to view tshuva as a, you know, I did an Aveira, which gives me 10 red marks in that column, but I did tshuva, which gives me 14 black marks in the other column. You know, fine, very good. So then you'd say, okay, but here, Beis Din will get rid of the 10 red marks, and then you just have 14 black marks, and you're in good shape, right? But on the other hand, if tshuva is making the chet as if it disappeared, so then there's nothing in the red column anymore. Those red things became erased by the tshuva. So why should the Sanhedrin even have anything to address?
How could these things reach it?
So you would say maybe that Beis Din can't measure the sincerity of somebody's tshuva. Ha-adam yireh le'inayim. A man can only see what he sees. Hashem sees the leva, Hashem sees to the heart. So that's an approach which some say, right? However, Rabbi Hartman, at the note in footnote number 4, quotes this as the Naida Behuda's explanation. I never saw this Naida Behuda inside, but the Naida Behuda, also a Rav in Prague, said, look, why shouldn't tshuva help? So footnote 4, he says, Elavada exeris hakosafi, halfway into the footnote, shilmole came but when sheter b'chlolan, you have to do it, because otherwise there would be no punishments ever imposed. Nobody would ever be killed in the Beis Din. Kiyemer chatasi v'in inishav, I sinned, but I did tshuva. Right? Get off the hook. If you do that, you will remove the deterrent value of Beis Din's punishments, because a person will just be able to say he did tshuva, make a sad face, and he'll be out, and so much for the deterrent. That's what the native Yudas says, very practical kind of an approach. However, the Maharal says, even if we know that he did tshuva, and we could tell the sincerity, and Rabbi Hartman brings a very nice proof. This is on his own. He says, the Gemara says in Ksubas that if a person sinned and he was a criminal, and he's as a result posel eidus, he's not qualified to testify. However, if we know that he did tshuva, then we will accept his testimony. So that means that on some level we do take it upon ourselves to determine what's a genuine tshuva and what's not a genuine tshuva. We may not be perfect, but we still are willing to wade out into that a little bit. So if that's the case, then why should Beis Din abdicate tshuva when it comes here? Right? So that's the way, you know, you see that Beis Din to some degree may be able to tell. That's where he addresses that. But this question, I mean, if the tshuva makes the Havera disappear, so really the Maral goes a step further. And he says, but one second, remember the Chazal that we were just discussing in the last perek? What was that? That Chachma and Nevuah and Torah didn't really know what to do with tshuva. Tshuva is something which can only be recognized by Hashem. Tshuva is something which can only be addressed by Hashem. So it's not just, says the Maral, that we're going to catch you on a technicality. Right? The first approach is sort of we catch you, I don't mean to say it, I shouldn't say it exactly this way, but I don't have a better way to say it. Doesn't shalmata, doesn't pay attention to the good things. It only pays, you know, it only comes to address the bad things. So therefore the tshuva doesn't register with the bezm shalmata. This is more than that. Tshuva, it's, you know, tzitzis or tefillin don't register with the bezm shalmata either. Right? Or, you know, in terms of reward and punishment. But tshuva, while tzitzis and tefillin is noticed by bezm shalmata, even though it's not their job to reward for it, tshuva isn't recognized for his bezm shalmata. When you say tshuva, there's such a thing as tshuva. Really? How does that work? We don't know how that works, so we can't apply it. Hashem knows how it works. Hashem can apply it. It only exists, therefore, in Ein Hatzuv Tshuva Rak Mitzar Hashem Yisbarach. So that's why bezm shalmata can't deal with it.
Doesn't that only work if you're saying it's tshuva out of Ahava? In tshuva out of Yira, you probably could see it. Tshuva out of Ahava, I mean, to see that someone who desperately wants a connection with Hashem changes because of that. No, but if you see that they're afraid, they change because...
And they regret. So on one level, yes. I was using that sort of separation that we made at the beginning today, yes. But on another level, there seems to be a fundamental problem when the Navi and the Chachma and the Torah, you know, is the guy did something bad. How do you rewrite history? How do you change it? Hashem, you go to Hashem, you can do it. So, yes, we've seen that Tshuva Me'ava is more of a going to Hashem than Tshuva Me'ira is. But you still need that piece. Tshuva Meira that doesn't go to Hashem, so that means that now it's therefore logical that a person could say, I regret it, I feel bad, therefore it's as if it didn't happen. I don't understand. I'm still, you know, my house is still flooded, or my neighbor is still, you know, dead, or whatever it is, you know. The you haven't changed what happened. I would like to just try to explain a little bit this idea. This is not the words of the Maral, but to explain this idea and this Chazal, this fundamental question a little bit better, so that maybe we can understand it, to deepen what we're hearing here.
What about the Gemara Tzuvos? The Rambam raised that you, Chazal, based in can't see, do something about you.
Well, for regarding a person's behavior going forward, that's not such an enigma. Tshuva is about the consequences, the punishment for something a person did in the past. To say that he can't testify is not a punishment because he did something in the past. His behavior in the past indicates that he's a person who's not worthy. He's not trustworthy. If he's changed, today he is worthy. But that doesn't mean that he can walk away from his past crimes and not have to pay the price for them. It just means that now he's worthy and now he can be treated differently. So there's a difference between those two. Okay, so the thing is like this. Time, the dimension called time, the continuum of time, goes from the past to the present to the future. And the way things work in this world is that way. Right? You look at things, people that exist in a normal ways, there's a trajectory of life. You live with your past. And if you go to a smart enough, clever enough, informed enough psychologist / sociologist, they'll tell you about your future. You don't need to be a prophet. Oh, of course, they may not be able to tell you about every detail, right? But, you know, you go to take someone, analyze someone from suburbia, grown up in such a kind of a household, or from Williamsburg, growing up in this kind of a thing, or from inner city, growing up in this kind of a thing. And yeah, okay, not just because they're born there, you're going to assume this is what's going to happen, but give them a few years, wait till they're around bar mitzvah, see their patterns of behavior, and it's not foolproof, it's not guaranteed, but you might be willing to put a decent wager down on where that fellow is headed. Right or wrong? Right or wrong? It's true. But it's not the way. That's the way of this world. Of this world where past leads to present, leads to future. In the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no such thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't exist within the dimension called time. I mentioned to you before the well-known teaching of the Goyim, of the Sforna, even before him, Bereshis Bara Elohim. In the beginning, Hashem created. Period. Hashem created that there was such a thing as a beginning, and then a middle, and then an end. That's part of Bria. Part of creation is place, and part of creation is time. It's also a dimension. Baruch Eisa Bereshis. Right, that's what the Goyen says, that's what it means when he says in Baruch Shabbat, blessed is Hashem who created the dimension of time that we exist within. And that means that we're just like we're in this place, we're also in this time, and this time is a result of yesterday's and tomorrow's. But from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reality, there's no such thing. When we said this morning, He recreates creation every instant. You know what the depth of that is? Is that on Hashem, on our side of the Bria, I say, this Sefer is sitting here now because you put it down here when you came to the Shir and you closed it when we started this extemporaneous discussion. That's why this book is like that. And it exists because it was printed several years ago in Eretz Yisrael and was shipped here who knows when, right? That's why it's here. But one second, I just said in davening this morning that Hashem renews gracious every instant, which means that the sentence that I'm telling you now is actually a series of disjointed micro sounds said by a new person, oh my gosh, I'm getting confused. Now, what does that mean? From Hashem's side, when you're not held by time, every instant is just that instant. Of course, the way it expresses itself on the human side of the world is where we exist within time, is we exist with history. History and projected futures. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whose name Havaya is this cholent of Haya, Haiva, Veya, of the past, the present, and the future, is because in Hashem there is no such thing really as past, present, and future. Hashem, we call him Hamokoim because he is not constrained by any place, and we call him Havaya because he's not constrained by any time. For Hashem, every instant is just that instant. That's Bashir Husham. When Hashem says, I hear you, Bashir Husham, it's because Hashem's not dealing with baggage. Hashem's not dealing with pasts. Hashem's constant vitality is constant recreation every instant, not just living with the sludge of the past. That's Bashir Husham. A human eye cannot see that. I can tell you, and we can say with Kavana every second, there is no way, excuse me for saying this, but there's no way with any sense of reality that you don't feel that you're wearing your shirt because you put it on this morning. And that you are the person who woke up this morning. And you're supposed to feel that way. It's not supposed to be that Hashem just created this great optical illusion. That's the reality within which we exist. So the Chacham and the Navi and the Torah, which is all in that, so to speak, reality within which we exist, they recognize that way. And the Bezin Shalmata says, you did this, that's part of history, it's part of you. It's part of you. Right? Just like that little scar from, you know, when you stuck your hand in the fire when you were 4 years old is still there as part of you. This is, it's part of you. And your future is anticipated. Tshuva is where a person is able to have a moment where they defy their past and they defy every projection about the future. And that's something which you can only do because you're not simply a creature of this world. That is tapping into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where history means nothing and projections mean nothing. The ultimate dynamism that a human being possesses to really do tshuva. Really do tshuva isn't just, you know, face, you know, that kid who was expected to do bad, bumps into some guy who, you know, who's a good influence on him and so on and so forth. The real power of tshuva that makes it that the past doesn't exist in a certain sense, Basher Husham, is a unique koach haneshama for a person to mamash recreate themselves. Nothing else can do that. And a Bezdin Shalmata, functioning as a Bezdin Shalmata, can't recognize that. So if you will, right, I'm putting this in a little bit into the Maral. Right? It's a second dimension, perhaps, of the second basis. We have tshuva, point one is coming to your senses. Right? That was point one, mind over matter. Tshuva, point two, was realizing where you come from, connecting to Hashem Yisbarach, right? Recreating the connection to Hashem. Point number three, or we can call it 2B, right? The second part of connection to Hashem, is to exercise the ultimate dynamic power of not just continuing, of not being stuck. Which is not a normal human power. It's a divine power, which it becomes a human power because we're B'Tselem Elokim. To really break with the past and with the projected future. That's that koyach. Not normal. Not within the world. Okay. I thought I was going to get farther in this parak, but that's a pattern which is beginning to merge. Yeah.
I would see the flip side of that much clearer because, for example, like, the person does something wrong to somebody else. Maybe they don't forget it tomorrow. But a year from now, that incident is much farther from their memory. And even if they kind of remember a little bit, if the person does tshuva, they can really put it out of their mind. And certainly when it comes to projecting the future, I could say, you know, Bezdin could say, we think this is what's going to happen. We certainly don't know with any certainty that this is going to happen. Hashem is exactly the opposite, because the past is right in front of him, and there's Rebbe's kind of picking on the point, well, there's this isn't, and then this isn't, and they're disjointed. There's also the fact that it's all jointed, and it's all there together. So it's in a sense, you know, when Hashem sees, you know, right now he's in tshuva, but this, so to speak, incident, Hashem also sees the infraction is fresh and new.
Beautiful.
Not only that, but the future is also, when Yishmael did it, Hashem sees right this instant that he will absolutely do that. So it's kind of the opposite.
It's a beautiful point. It's a beautiful point. We say in Shikha l'fnei kisech v'edecha, yes, people may be more liable to forget and forgive as a result of forgetting. Kadosh Baruch Hu never just simply forgives because he forgets. And that's also, yes, a function of Hayahai v'viyah, that there's no past, there's no distant past. I think they're both true. I think they're both true. But it's an excellent counterpoint on the same thing as now. Okay, very good. Have a good day. So, yeah.
I know it was that we're often very negative. I wonder if this is like a pencil solace, like it's part of the Teva, you know, look for Katron. I don't know if there's another institution complementary to Basin that, like, you know, encourages and, you know, reinforces the good, the positive qualities, you know, but, you know, it's like when I go to the doctor, he's only interested in, like,
what's wrong?
Yeah.
In my world, it's called Ben and Jerry's. always emphasize the present. Always feel good coming out of there. Excuse me.
I don't know if that's just a comparison, or if there's maybe the tab of almost that. I mean, the reality is you need to also...
This idea, which you're expressing, which is a continuation of what the Maharal is expressing about the Sanhedrin just feeling negatively, although we saw the Maharal, that idea, you know, preparation, positive, trying to prepare for a better, another world, it's something which really requires. Your point is a very important point, and that what this idea of the Sanhedrin only dealing with that is it's a deep point. It's a deep issue. It's a deep issue that deserves a discussion of itself. We could speak about that this world is a world of heder, it's a world of negativity, it's a world of loss. It needs more.
Moshe was